Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Dan Wyke, Orange County Register, Clippers beat writer, TV connoisseur, in a car.
Yes.
We're recording this on a Tuesday.
By the way, I lied. I'm at home now.
Oh, you're at home. Oh, okay.
I came home for this.
Wow. Actually, were you just like
I want to give you my full attention.
Mid errands, and you're like, all right, I got to get home for this.
So, true story. I was driving somewhere, and I had a contact lens rip in my, like, I rubbed my eye, and it ripped the contact lens while I was on the freeway, and I almost, like, got in a car accident. So I was like, I need to go home and change contacts, and I decided just to stay home and do this podcast.
That's great. That's great for us, and it's great for our listeners. Yeah. I don't know that it's probably coming out Wednesday. I'm actually heading your way. I'm off the next 5 days, and I'll be in Southern California for a wedding.
Hey, let's talk off air about maybe getting dinner or beverage.
That sounds great. So. Okay. We won't make those plans on air, as interesting as that would be.
No.
But maybe when we have drinks or dinner, we can discuss the Clippers.
We will, probably. That's all anybody ever really wants to talk to me about.
Is that is that annoying to you? Sometimes you're just like, damn it, I want to talk about the Nets today.
No, well, I'll tell you what's weird about it. So I think people mistake my ability to talk about the Clippers with, like, I mean, I view them as pretty much my, like, I do cover the league, but I primarily cover the Clippers. So I view them as, like, kind of my sole focus. Like, when I go to Hoops Hype or if I'm on Twitter and I'm trying to find rumors or any of that stuff, like, I'm looking for Clipper rumors, not necessarily, you know, Houston Rocket rumors or something like that. And then I always find it kind of interesting when sometimes people get upset with me when, you know, I say, like, or the people get mad at me when they're like, why do you talk about the Clippers so much? And it's like, well, it's my job. That's like my area of expertise.
Right.
You know, you'd get mad at a geologist who didn't just primarily talk about rocks. Like, right. That is his line of work. And that's kind of how I feel. So, like, do I ever get sick of talking about the Clippers? Like, yeah, for sure. I mean, that's me. But it is also what I think I know best. So. Yeah. It kind of works like that. Well, I don't know. This is off to a horrible start, Zach. I'm sorry. I'm let me focus in here. So maybe I should be driving.
maybe the last podcast we did, you were riding in a car. You weren't driving.
Yes.
And that one was great. So, yeah, maybe you should at least just go into the car right now.
Maybe I should call an Uber and just have him just take me around town.
I would love for this podcast to cost you $58. That would be great. So the Clippers had an active summer in that they tried to steal Kevin Durant, and then they ended up paying some bench players to stay and grab some depth after they lost Cole Aldrich, and maybe Paul Pierce is going to retire. We don't know yet. Let's go on a scale of 7 to 10. What would you give the Clippers off season?
an 8, I guess, in that sense. Probably, I would say. I mean, look, I think having a seat at the Kevin Durant table was important for them. And I think that they had a real shot. Obviously, the thing that kind of cost them was just how complicated it would be to get it done. Like, if there is something you want to fault the Clippers for, it's not having the foresight maybe 2 years ago to put themselves in a better position to get Durant when he became available. But I mean, that's a dicey proposition because 2 years ago they were a title contender, just like they were a title contender last year, just like, again, this year they'll be kind of in that group of fringe contenders. Although this year, obviously, it'll be much different because of where Durant ultimately ended up. But I think they had a seat at that table. After that, their plan was already kind of predetermined. They were going to have to, just based on their cap situation, try to use bird rights on Austin Rivers, Jeff Green, and Jamal Crawford. They end up with two of those three guys. I think ultimately, you know, how much you want to give Jeff Green and be tied to him for the next 2 or 3 years, I think that's certainly debatable. And then, you know, they went out and they tried to get value guys. And I think when you look at the way they were able to fill out their roster with, you know, only their exceptions and no cap room, they were able to get Wes Johnson back. They were able to get Luke Mbamute, who was really important to them last year. They signed Mo Spates. They get Alan Anderson. They get Raymond Felton. They get Brandon Bass. I mean, they actually fill out a bench. They look deeper than they were a year ago. Their roster makes some sense. I still think they could use another shooter.
Yeah. They still kind of have to figure out that small forward position, right? Like, Bamute was good in that role,
yes.
But you would ideally have a guy who can, like, defend maybe 75% of the way Bamute can defend and then shoot much better than him.
I mean, this is where I think they were enamored with what they saw. Enamored is a strong word. I think, again, this is where, like, they're going to probably have to hope that Wes Johnson kind of becomes that, and they'll be the fifth team to do so.
Right.
And, you know, he shows signs of it, and it's just not consistent enough, and I think that's just going to be the way they handle that position. They'll play, you know, a lot of smaller lineups where they use Jamal at the three. They can do weird things with Austin Rivers. That's one of his specialties, doing weird things. And so they can kind of make that work. They can do some different stuff. I think Alan Anderson can play some three for them if he's healthy. I that's a signing I really love.
I like him a lot.
I mean, he's a veteran guy. He's a good locker room guy. He's a winner. Grindy. I'm just going to keep saying things that make people angry. About him, that are all these intangibles, and he shoots it well, and he's a willing defender. Obviously he's not young, and he's coming off an ankle surgery, so you know how healthy is he going to be? The hope is that he's going to be really healthy, and that's I think he's going to have a big chip on his shoulder. I think a lot of these guys, you kind of saw the market dry up for them, are going to play with tons of motivation this year because there are giant paydays out there. There's a lot of incentive to come into camp in shape and to be productive this season because if you're on a one-year deal, you're going into a huge boom, and it might be the last one.
Yeah, I mean,
at least in the short term.
Yeah, the CBA,
with the CBA changing
is probably
and stuff.
Changing, and at least like kind of it all. It feels like it always takes like a couple of years for the agents to realize like the way to leverage whatever leverage they have and to find the loopholes and all that stuff. So yeah, I think that you are kind of in a smaller window for this stuff. Does that come into shape? I mean, these guys are going to get big deals no matter what, but like, does that come into shape for this camp and this year and really be ready for it, apply even more so to Blake and Chris Paul because they can opt out?
Well, I mean, I think there's that. I do think that there is this sort of this sense that, you know, we've said this for the last 2 years really, but you know, maybe this is really it for this core. You know, you've got two guys with ETOs that can opt out and enter, you know, a wildly lucrative market where they both get, you know,
the max.
Chris Paul's in line for $30 million. Yeah, Blake Griffin's in line for, you know, close to. So these are guys that are about to get huge, huge paychecks. And they control their own destiny. Blake has never been a free agent, you know. I think that's going to be a really interesting free agency. He's going to have tons of options. And he can do it he can go win places in smaller markets. He can kind of, you know, follow through with, you know, some of his Hollywood stuff. He can stay in California. He can go to the Lakers. I mean, there are crazy options on the table for him.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to me that there is that idea of, like, he would potentially go back to Oklahoma to join Russell Westbrook.
Sure.
Mostly because, like, I don't know him, but I just don't feel like he's that guy anymore, if that makes sense. Like, I kind of feel like he likes the big market. He likes the attention. He likes the opportunities outside of basketball that maybe that can still present, even though it's 2016 now, or it'll be 2017 when he's a free agent. But I don't know. I don't know that I feel like he's the, I'm going to go to a small town organization anymore, but that could just be me incorrectly assuming that from the outside.
Sure. I mean, like, let's assume he doesn't go sign up the Timberwolves like everybody else is going to want to do. Here
right. I mean, can they fit
let's
him,
that out
Durant, let's Chris Paul under the cap? That's going to be a tough one.
I know. It will be hard. They'll all take minimums.
They'll all take minimums.
To play their winners in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Let's assume that doesn't happen. I can tell you this. Just being around him for 5 years, and this is speculative because I don't know what Blake Griffin's thinking, clearly. But I do know he speaks about Oklahoma with reverence. I think he enjoyed his time growing up there. I think he enjoyed, obviously, enough to go to college there. And I've never heard him talk, though, about playing at home. I've never heard it. Now, that doesn't mean it hasn't happened.
Right.
Like, that's some sort of desire.
I don't know. I kind of feel like going home and stuff like that is one of those things that, you know, it comes up every so often. Obviously, LeBron James is you know, the cover boy for this, literally. But I'm not so sure I'm pretty sure that not everybody wants that. That going right. home is sometimes a pain. I mean, I think we saw that with Kevin Durant, you know, dealing with the ticket requests and dealing with all that stuff. Now, look, you're going to deal with that stuff in a big market too. You know, but it's a little more controlled when it's not family, when you're not saying no to aunts and uncles and to cousins. It's a little easier to say no to just kind of like randoms. You know what I mean? Like just kind of like new friends and stuff like that. It's not as stressful. It's not as personal. And you're able to kind of go do it on your own. I think sometimes we always kind of put, I think, our values
right.
on the professional athletes. And I think that's one of those. I mean, I think we all kind of look, you know, at least for me personally, I mean, I always look at, you know, I'm from Chicago. Like, would I love eventually to one day go work back in Chicago and be around the places I grew up? Like, of course. Like, to me, like, that's an allure. But I'm not a professional athlete. Like, it's not going to be – there are going to be no more distractions
right.
for me doing it. You know what I mean? It's pretty seamless for me or for anybody else. Like, but I think for those guys, it's a totally different scenario. And I think that's one of those things, like, we always put that on them. And I don't know how many people want that.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I don't know if it adds more pressure. I think it adds more of a complication, but it also probably depends on, like,
sure.
what's your family like? What are your friends like? Like, you know.
It changes the stakes, is what it does.
Yeah,
ultimately. Is so, like, I mean, a great example is Derrick Rose and this, and how quickly that city, you know, rightfully or wrongfully so, turned on Derrick Rose. I spent a week in Chicago this year, and I had dinner with my fiance's family. She's also from Chicago. Her grandmother, you know, sweet lady in her 80s, big Chicago Bulls fan, loves Derrick Rose, right? And I asked her how she was handling, you know, the post-Rose Bulls years, and she's like, I think she said to hell with him.
Wow.
Like she had turned, like, in the last year. Like, had totally turned.
Wow.
And I was like, you know, totally Jimmy Butler. And I think that's sort of, you know, like, he, in that city, the stuff that kind of happened with his injuries, some of his, you know, the way he talked about them, obviously all that stuff's well documented. But that city turned on him pretty quickly. And if it wasn't like, you know, if it wasn't venom, it was kind of indifference towards him.
Which
and,
I would,
and
I
really
think
actually
that's
towards
kind
the
of,
Bulls in general.
I would think that's kind of worse. Right? Like, to, like,
yeah.
The whole model seems to be like you either want to elicit, you know, extreme fandom where everyone loves you and they'll defend you to death, or some kind of reaction where they're like, no, this is wrong. If they're just like, eh, I don't really care. Like, that almost seems worse to me.
Yeah, this is a very pro wrestling take of you, Zach. I know you're a huge fan.
I am a huge fan.
You know, the worst thing you can be is get no reaction.
Right.
Either you get cheered or you get booed. But if people don't care, that means that's the worst, that you're not eliciting any emotion to anybody. And,
right.
And it's weird. That's sort of what the Chicago Bulls have kind of become anecdotally, at least in my dealings with my friends and family when I talk to them about it when I go home, is, you know, you think, like, they were splashy. Like, you know, they signed Rondo. They signed Dwayne Wade. It's like, okay, like, this is a new Bulls team. And people are kind of like, I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
People are just kind of, it's kind of meh.
Yeah, that's all. Like, for a while, the Timberwolves were there, and now, like, they get Cat, they get Wiggins, they get Dunn to an extent. Some people like LaVine, Tom Thibodeau, you know, I guess provides some hope because he's a competent coach and very good coach, and that gets people, like, kind of feeling excited again. But for the longest time, like, even in, what was it, 2013-14, when the Wolves were supposed to, you know, at least make the playoffs, right? Or at least be in the hunt for the playoffs, and they
yeah.
winning just 40 games. Even then, like, a week into the season, nobody was going to those games in Minnesota. And it just became to a point like, all right, even if there's potential with this team, and even if this is supposed to be a team in the playoff hunt, we don't really care anymore. Like, we're just kind of over this team being having the potential to be bad, whereas now there's like, okay, well, we can at least see, like, this franchise guy we can get behind, and we can get excited.
And I think this is kind of an interesting segue, because, like, and this doesn't happen in Los Angeles. It doesn't happen within, like, Clipper fans necessarily. I know Clipper fans are excited about their team. They've been excited about their team the last few years. But, like, kind of outside of their bubble, I feel like at this point, like, the Clippers are kind of met with that sort of meh.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a movie that people have seen before a bunch of times. And I don't know. I mean, we've talked about this before in terms of kind of people's attitudes about the Clippers. But that's one of those things, too. I mean, I do feel like they are met with sort of, you know, I think some indifference. I mean, people certainly hate them, too. But there is a little bit of indifference, I think, to them, at least casually. It's sort of like, yeah, I mean, what's new here with this team?
Right, because there was the, oh, Blake Griffin's exciting. Oh, my God, they got Chris Paul. And then it's whatever weird playoff exit, you know, of the year. Sure. And it becomes just like it definitely becomes, not every franchise goes through this, but it definitely becomes a, well, we have to see it before we start buying in even more, right? And I guess that would have been the Kevin Durant move. I think it becomes tedious for the players. Oh, sure.
I think it becomes tedious for the players, too.
Have to go through that whole campaign again? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you know, I mean, look, I think the Durant thing is, like, a really interesting thing. And maybe people didn't think they had, like a very realistic chance. I can't speak to that. I can just tell you in terms of, like, the local talk shows and, like, the stuff like that. I mean, maybe it's my fault. I wasn't getting a lot of phone calls about it.
Yeah.
But people weren't like, let's talk about Kevin Durant to the Clippers. You know, like, it just didn't really happen. And you know, there were a lot of good reasons for Kevin Durant to go to the Clippers. I think, you know, being in Los Angeles is one of them, I think. Obviously, and we've seen this a little bit with the Team USA stuff. Him and DeAndre Jordan are close. And I think that that's not a small factor. I think that would have been, you know, a partnership he would have liked to have kind of grown with, I think. And DeAndre is kind of in a weird way, and we can talk about this too in a minute, but, you know, it's sort of the perfect Clipper to be out there recruiting, at least on the Team USA stance. He's got a big personality. He requires the ball literally never,
right.
You know what I mean, except above the rim.
He'll back
and
you
he just sets screens. He play. Yeah, he plays hard on defense. He sets screens. He rebounds. And, like, he's someone who likes to joke around. You know what I mean? Like, this is like he is the perfect guy to be out there kind of recruiting. And I think, you know, that could have, if we're going to believe all of the stuff about Kevin Durant, how easily he is to be swayed, you know, he's certainly someone who could have had a lot of weight there. They just didn't have the flexibility to make it very realistic.
Yeah, well,
but there was a chance.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. Well, I guess, yeah, if you get in the room for him, not everyone got in the room. It's not like all 30 teams got to parade their, you know, their pitch to him. Like, there was, what, six teams? Thunder,
correct.
Warriors, Clippers,
that sounds right.
Celtics, Heat. I feel like I'm forgetting somebody, but yeah, like, the Spurs? Spurs got a shot? Yeah.
Yes.
So there's, you know, there is a chance in that sense. I guess the complication then becomes, how do you fill out the roster? Are there enough ring chasers to go then want to sign for the minimum in a summer where everyone's getting crazy paid, right? Like, that's kind of the complication in that, too, is you have to get rid of Redick, you have to renounce all these guys, and then
you have to find guys to
really take minimums. I mean, maybe they get Bam Mute to agree to that, right? Like, maybe they still get Mo Spates, maybe they still get Ray Felton, maybe then they convince David West and Zaza Pachulia to come join them. Like, I don't really know how that works.
It's one of those things that it's interesting because I do think under the right circumstances a team could do it and pull it off, and I think you could do it in LA, certainly. I think you could do it in Miami. You could probably do it in New York where you kind of, I think you do it with the Warriors, honestly.
Right.
And they may have to at some point if they keep everybody and they keep paying everybody. At a certain point, I do think that you could fill out a 9 or 10 man rotation with, you know, above average NBA rotation players. I think where it gets kind of tricky is, you know, how do you handle kind of, you know, if you're 8 deep or you're 9 deep and you have no draft picks because you can't afford them, literally you have nobody that – you have no first-round picks at least. Like, you've got to get lucky, I think, with some of your developmental guys. And you need to kind of go through that, not necessarily injury-free in your stars, but I think kind of in your your rotation guys. Those are the guys you have to keep healthy in that scenario. But I think it could happen. And I think that it was kind of a interesting sort of pitch to make from the Clippers sense to kind of lead with that instead of, you know, hey, do you want to play with Blake? You know, well, maybe we can entertain trading Chris. Or do you want to play with DeAndre? Well, maybe we can entertain trading Blake. Now, I think through back channels, if those things were put on the table, the Clippers certainly would have listened and would have been interested in it. But I think kind of pushing the let's have four guys and then a bunch of minimum contracts, it was kind of a bold move.
It is. I mean, it's ballsy, right? Like to say, hey, we're going to gut our team to have these four guys, and we believe, you know, even though we've seen in history, like, you need more than those four guys, we believe you guys are good enough to do it. And then maybe we can, I don't know, do you get them, can you restructure in a way that makes it beneficial to the team a year later when Blake and Chris can become free agents? There's no way Chris Paul takes a huge pay cut in order to grab another guy, right? Like, I don't even know if that was financially possible under the
cap. I think that was sort of the pitch was, you know, even under that scenario, Durant was still taking a pay cut this year. You know, and next year is kind of part of the deal, if you're to believe what Doc Rivers has said on rival podcasts, I won't name here podcast. Out of respect to you, mostly.
Yeah, we're coming for you, Woj.
He gets Doc Rivers, you get me. You know, there's some rivalry. I think that, you know, that those guys had agreed under that circumstance that, yeah, next summer when it's my turn to take a pay cut, I'll take one too.
Right.
But you never know in that situation. And who knows how that type of stuff works. You know, and I think listening to J.J. Redick talk about this, I believe on a rival television show that I won't name out of respect to you. You know, talking about managing egos and stuff like that and how you handle that. That would be a really interesting kind of dichotomy when you've got four guys in the locker room making all over $20 million and you've got, you know, seven or eight other ones, you know, making between $1.5 million and $800,000. You know, what's that locker room like? I think that could be, like, that's severe imbalance.
Well, that was the
and
interesting
I kind of
thing,
wonder.
That was the interesting thing to me about, like, if the Warriors didn't get Durant and then they have to give Harrison Barnes the max because someone else tries to steal him away. What's that locker room like with Harrison Barnes making more money than everybody? Like, that stuff could have been, like, it's possible the Warriors were just like, that's just how it goes, and they would have been fine. I also think, like, some of those guys could have had a real problem with that.
Yeah, they seem to be, like, so above that stuff, you know, at least from the outside.
Yeah.
Like, because of how they play, they're so, like, they play so selflessly. Like Zach, I mean, you know, I think for a lot of people that, you know, if you bust your butt for 20 seconds on defense to get the ball and you kick it out to the point guard and he shoots a 38 footer in transition. Like, a lot of people are like, you know, like, why am I doing this?
That just sounds like,
you know what I mean? Like,
me.
I know that's how you play. And that's why, you know, you're really a trendsetter in that regard. But
sure.
You know, I mean, but they don't, that stuff doesn't seem to bother them.
Right.
You know, they seem to be really willing, and that's going to be tested this year because I don't care what anybody, like, I mean, that, you know, oh, our offense is, you know, we're going to put the ball in the basket and stuff like that. Like, you know, one night it's going to be someone sacrificed and then the next night it's going to be someone else. Well, what if it's your night to sacrifice six nights in a row?
Yeah.
What if it's your night to sacrifice for a month straight?
Right.
Like, then what? You know, I think they're going to be able to do it. I think they're going to be fine. They seem to have the right culture for all of this. But it's not nothing either. Like, it's a challenge. It'll be a challenge.
I don't think people realize, like, the ego and competitiveness that has to go into being an NBA player. And just talking to them,
yes,
you know, over the years, like, you definitely get a glimpse into just how much that stuff matters. Now, you can put that aside. You can sacrifice. Like, all that stuff matters. But you don't get to that point without having that, even if you're as humble as Derrick Rose or as humble as Steph Curry. Like, that stuff still matters to them. Like, they still want to be a leader. They still want to destroy their opponent. Like, they still want to do all that stuff. And if for whatever reason they start out slowly, I don't think it's going to ruin them. Like, I think it ends up being a lot like the Miami Heat when they got LeBron and they, like, were 9-8 and everyone's like, oh, maybe this won't work. No, it'll work eventually. It's just whether or not it works right
sure.
away can complicate things.
Yeah, I mean, I think it can be a little awkward at times, and I think there will be, you know, probably some growing pains. I mean, but they are going to have so much talent offensively. I mean, more so than those Miami teams, certainly. The way they play is going to be like, I mean, I, you know, watching, you know, and passing some of these Team USA games, you know, having to see one in person in Los Angeles, you know, there could be scenarios where it's just like, you know, you just go and shoot. You know, there's going to be three guys wide open.
Right.
And they're three of the best, you know, two of them are going to be two of the best shooters, you know, in league history. There's going to be so much spacing. It's going to be ridiculous. Like, they've got so much offensive talent. And they're going to be, you know, they're going to be able to get to the basket because they're going to be so spread out. It's going to look, I think, at times like an all-star team. Like, I mean, like, literally, it's going to look like an all-star game.
Yeah, I mean, they should have four all-stars. 100% should have four all-stars next year, right? No matter what the numbers are.
That sounded more profound in my head. That sounded like a more profound realization in my head before I said it. And hearing it, it's like, of course it's going to sound like an all-star game, idiot. Like, it's going to look like an all-star game. They've got a bunch of all-stars on that team.
Right.
But, yeah, no, I mean, I think stylistically it could look like that.
Yeah. No, I agree with
that. It could look like a lopsided talent gap. But I also think they're going to get, you know, tremendous challenges from everybody else in the league. They're going to be teams that, you know, I mean, even more so than last year, I think are going to come after the Warriors with you know, everything they have in the regular season. It's going to be a grind for them.
Yeah, emotionally, in terms of, like, focus, it definitely will be a grind. There's a tipping point with what their talent is, right? And that's most likely what breaks through 76 times out of 82 games or whatever they end up winning.
Yeah, I mean, look, are they going to go 83-0 like that one model projects?
That's the dumbest story to me. That is really the dumbest story of, like, what one model said 83-0. Well, then clearly it was wrong. If you end up with any model that has more games than played than possible, like, that's just dumb. Like, I don't know that I think, like, the Warriors are that impressive because it broke the model. I just think the model's bad.
Yeah, I like that. That's a smart observation, Zach. Yeah, I don't think that they're going to gun for 70s. I wonder, I mean, especially coming off of, like, you know, such a colossal disappointment, and this is something I've seen firsthand with the Clippers. It's hard to come back, especially when you have to go through a regular season to get to where you want to go, because this team, believe me, the Golden State Warriors want to be in the NBA Finals. They want to win a championship. They are built to do both. How that kind of manifests itself in, you know, December in Charlotte is challenging. It's challenging for everybody. And they were really good at it last year. And I think a big part of that was they had 73 as kind of a target. You know what I mean? And they had sort of, they were able to kind of, you know, ride the coattails of some perceived disrespect and stuff like that. And they were able to use that for motivation. But where does that come from this year? You know what I mean? Where's the motivation to attack the regular season the same way?
Well, I think that's,
you know,
where,
to prove everybody wrong. Like, I mean, everybody thinks they're gonna win.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's where you maybe look to the 2014 Spurs as the model, right? Like, to lose the way they did in the finals against the Heat and come back and then just obliterate the way they did, at least when they got to the postseason. Seems like the model, and maybe they can draw on something like that and make it work. But I also, in that same respect, like, kind of the problem with the Clippers is they have this annoying way of losing in the playoffs, right? And then they have to come back and go through the entire 82-game schedule and get positioning for whatever playoffs push, and then crap can just happen that is out of their control or within their control or whatever, and they go through it again. The tricky thing for the Warriors in this respect is they will have to close out that finals, however many games it is. And I think a lot of people expect them to do that, but it's not just, oh, you have to get past the second round and then you're in new territory. No, they have to win four games in the finals, and then they've made up for that collapse, right? And that's there is a full journey in this, not like, oh, we get to a certain point and we're okay.
Yeah, no, it is certainly. I mean, it's a novel, right? It's not a short story. Right. And handling kind of, I think, the ups and downs of it, it's one of those things I'm not sure people who aren't close to it feel or understand as much. But that's one of those, like, it's a long season, Zach. It is a very long season. And it's one of those things where it's hard to get up for those games in December that don't feel like they matter. And of course they all matter, but I think, you know, when you've been doing it, and then you've been doing it for 8 years, and you've been doing it for 10 years, and you're a veteran in this league and stuff like that, like, it's a difficult thing. And part of the reason why, you know, NBA players are great, or the great NBA players are great, is that they're able to kind of, you know, they've got pride, and they're able to kind of, you know, when they're out on the court and they're performing, they don't think about that stuff. They just want to be great and have great performances. And they're able to do that. Now, add a little adversity to that, and you just don't know what's going to happen. I'm not suggesting that I think the Golden State Warriors are going to have these tremendous struggles this year. I mean, I think they're far too talented for that. And they're well coached, and they've got, you know, they've created almost a perfect culture there. I think they'll be just fine. That's my hot Warriors take.
Well, I found my headline for this podcast, so that's good.
The Warriors will be just fine. But I do think, though, that, you know, the kind of the grind of an 82-game season does present unique challenges. And when you add such a new piece to your puzzle, there are just a lot of unknowns. And I'll be very interested to see kind of how those play out over the course of this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to, like, that's kind of the thing, too, is Matt and I have talked about it, how he's just like, oh, well, they're just going to win, so there's nothing interesting. I don't know. There's certain psychological aspects to this whole thing. And because they have to win the championship in order to make up for the collapse last year. And it'll be a point where, like, even if they're up 3-0 in the series, in the finals against the Cavs, like, they're still going to have to close them out. And that's still going to be pressure revisited and unearthed and all that crap, right? And so to me, that, like, just the whole approach, mental approach to it, is way more fascinating than even sometimes the basketball on the court.
Which comes across in your work all the time, like the mental stuff, Zach.
Right, no. I'm super cerebral. I wrote about Hakeem Olajuwon eating 100 chicken nuggets in a photo shoot earlier today.
I saw that story today. How many chicken nuggets do you think you could eat for that?
I don't know. Not 100. Well, I guess, all right, over 5 hours? Can I eat 100 chicken? That's 20 an hour? That sounds like a lot.
With activity? Absolutely.
How much activity is there? He's just standing there dunking chicken nuggets.
I mean, he's like moving around, though. He's just not eating 100 straight chicken nuggets in 5 hours.
Right.
That math doesn't add up.
All right, five hours.
There's a lot of, that's one every 3 minutes?
I think I could put down 60 in 5 hours.
Oh, I could put down 60 in an hour, I think, if you really wanted to.
I mean, I like chicken nuggets. Like, I could definitely put away a 20-pack in a meal, but there's just got to be... There's got to be a tipping point. Like, this has got to be the equivalent of the 1 gallon.
So you don't have – so maybe I'm an outlier here. But, like, you don't have that moment when you eat 20 chicken nuggets, which I've done before.
Sure.
I'm happy to admit that I've done that. I have not been deterred by their – they've stopped packaging them in a 20 box for some reason.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Two tens. You get two tens now instead. Like they're trying to shame you. Like,
that's
you're doing something bad, which you probably are. But – you know, you get that moment when you get done with that 20th nugget and you're like, I could eat 10 more. Like, you don't have that feeling, like, right away, that split decision where
no.
Then you, like, walk away and you just...
I mean, maybe 10, 15 years ago when, like, I could eat anything and be fine, right? But now I get to a point where, like, if it was now, no. If I ate 20, I would think, okay, cool, I can either run for 4 hours tomorrow, I would definitely be sweating, or, like, maybe I should just die. Like, not even kill myself, just allow my body to die at this moment, which I feel like is within
your control. Like, you'd get the heartburn that, like, you mistake for, like, actual chest pains and stuff like that. Where you're, like,
it would probably radiate my back.
I just ate 20 chicken nuggets.
Right.
Yeah. That's fair. I think if I had enough sweet and sour sauce, though, I could probably eat out.
Oh, so you go sweet and sour. See, I go barbecue.
Oh, I love the sweet and sour. So good.
Not related.
I am thinking about driving McDonald's right now for the second part of this. Do you have any more? Do we have any more Clipper stuff you want to deal with? I mean, look.
We should talk about the overpay or the assumed overpay of Austin Rivers and Jamal Crawford real quick.
Yeah, based on Austin Rivers buying that fancy new car. I don't know if you saw that on the internet. That was a thing. That's another really annoying part about covering the Clippers, by the way, is, like, how much attention I have to pay to TMZ.
Sure.
That's an annoying part.
Yeah, that's got to be awful. I think the key is, like, people see $10 million or whatever it was for Austin Rivers and Jamal Crawford each – per year, they go, that's crazy, they're not worth that, which is maybe true, although the inflation of the cap
worth,
or whatever.
Worth is an interesting word.
Yeah, that's tough. But at the same time, like, it's not like the Clippers could just take that money and say, okay, well, we'll give it to this guy instead. Like, there's the whole, you know, rights thing and going over the cap and all that crap, right?
Yeah, it's exactly what they faced last year with DeAndre Jordan. Where, like, does it make sense to max DeAndre Jordan? And it's like, of course it does, because they don't have $26 million to go get Marc Gasol otherwise.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, no, you have who you have, and you can pay who you can pay. These are the rules under the salary cap, that it's much easier to re-sign your own guys than go acquire. You know, this was part of the Jeff Green trade. I mean, they looked at the free agency market, and they looked at the small forward market, and they thought, you know, well, Jeff Green's going to be a guy who's going to get a lot of money. We have no cap room. We can get him now. And then we can, if we have to overpay him in July, we can do so and, you know, not go over the salary cap or whatever. Or we can do it. We can have that player.
Yeah, we don't like the draft pick anyway, so let's just get rid of that future draft pick that we don't want to use.
Yeah, right. But let's assume we're not going to play that guy anyway.
Right.
You know, that type of stuff. So, like, and look, that's a whole other conversation. That they're in the cycle of this where it's and it'll be interesting to see. You know, they've kind of revamped their developmental staff this year, making, you know, some pretty big changes on that side of things. I think, you know, an effort to maybe try to move forward with some of the younger players, because, you know, they have to do it eventually, because if they keep having three max guys, if they stay with this core, which – it's a good core. It's a hard one to walk away from. You have Chris Paul, who's going to be in the Hall of Fame. You have Blake Griffin, who's probably headed to the Hall of Fame if he continues on his current career trajectory. You have DeAndre Jordan, who is coming off of, you know, a first-team All-NBA season, who's a Team USA guy who I think is kind of finally established his worth in this league.
Yeah.
Where people kind of get, you know, kind of what he does and why he's so valuable. You know, it's hard to say, like, let's change that. That core is good for right around 50 wins every year, it seems like, you know, at least at this time in their careers. And you know, they're good enough to kind of keep you around it. But the problem is then you don't have a lot of money to spend elsewhere. That's why this team has never been able to find a small forward, you know, kind of in the big three era. They've invested, now maybe that's Redick's money that could go there. Maybe that's Jamal Crawford's money, you know, a couple years ago that could have gone there. But this summer, it wasn't like pay Jamal Crawford or go use that $12 million to go try to get Ken Bazemore.
Right.
Like, that's not how it works. And so they were either faced with signing Austin Rivers and signing Jamal Crawford, or essentially having no one, having, you know, $6 million, I think, in cap room or something like that, like,
yeah,
minimal cap room. And then you lose your mid-level exception, too, on top of that. So.
And who's the guy you can sign with $6 million? Like, you can go sign Wayne Ellington, right? Like, that's it.
Yeah.
So
that's your option.
Right.
So, and guess who else knows this, Zach? Jamal Crawford's agent.
Well, that's
Austin Rivers' agent.
Nobody should have told them
Clippers.
This information.
Yeah, and the Clippers know this too. So, you know what I mean? Like, from a negotiating standpoint, it's not like look, man, the Clippers would have loved it if Jamal Crawford would have taken $7 million.
Right.
They would have been thrilled, you know. But that was not a realistic option. And it wasn't for anybody. And maybe it would be altruistic to say, well, Jamal Crawford should know that he's only worth $7 million, so he shouldn't ask for twice that much. Well, that's silly. That's just dumb, and it's juvenile.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, look, they were faced with, like, honestly, no options, I think. They could have just said, forget this. We don't want to tie up anything long-term. We're going to start transitioning, and we think those three are good enough that we can put anybody with them. But, you know, they don't believe that. They look around the West. They look and they see the teams at the top, and they know they've got to have they have to have a lot of options to win. And I think they felt like the moves they made, not to mention with Austin Rivers too, again, still like one of their few players under the age of 25.
Well,
like, that's important to note. That
I think it's super realistic that he plays into that contract, right? Especially with the rising cap. Like, I don't think it's crazy to think that Austin Rivers in the next 3 years can be a $10 million guy in a cap that's going to be, like, $108 million.
Sure. I think that there's some speculation that he's going to continue to get better offensively. I think they like what they saw defensively from him over the last year and a half, where he's been a willing defender, a guy not afraid to guard Kevin Durant for 5 minutes and look okay doing so. You know, like, now that was once. Right. You know, like, is that something that can happen all the time? I don't think so. But, you know, he's willing to take on those challenges. I mean, I think in the playoffs you saw when, you know, Chris Paul got hurt, you know, again, he's certainly not afraid of moments, and he plays really hard, and he does a lot of good things, I think. It's a lot of money, though, still, but I think he's a rotation player, you know, and that might be what it costs to sign a rotation player now.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, especially in a situation where you have all the leverage. Like, that's just
all the leverage. All of the leverage. Yeah. All of it. Like, that was the thing, is that, now, if you want to fault Doc Rivers for being in a situation where he doesn't have a lot of leverage, that's fine.
100%, yeah.
I just think, though, but the answer to that is to not have Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan. That's the other side of that,
right?
Is that you're kind of limited in those situations. Now, they've had money that they've used other ways that I think has been a little foolish. They've missed on virtually all of their exceptions. You know what I mean? The Spencer Hawes's, the, you know, Paul Pierce last year. Guys that have hard capped them in the past. I think, you know, the Jared Dudley trade is one that continues to kind of be a head scratcher in hindsight.
Yeah.
That, you know, maybe they could have figured out a way to not part with the first round pick or to keep a guy that might have had some use for them, especially as they kind of move forwards without, you know, maybe enough shooting. It's interesting. I mean, I keep reading about, you know, Ray Allen wants to come back. I don't know how Ray Allen fits in on this basketball team. You know, I he's a shooter, I guess. And maybe they just want to have more shooting. I don't know who they cut to make room for him. It'd be a, you know, if Paul Pierce retires, do you replace Paul Pierce
with a 42-year-old man?
Yeah. Gosh, can you imagine being in a room with Amin El-Hassan when that happens? Can you imagine?
I would have to, if I got any kind of tip that it was going to happen, I would have to fly to Phoenix and be around him.
Like, that would be the moment. That would be the day that I would want to be with him. That would, I mean, not that there aren't other ones. But that would be
the one day I'd ever want to be around him.
That might be the fun day. Would be the day that Paul Pierce retires and the Clippers replace him with Ray Allen.
That would be pretty great.
Oh, man.
Speaking of,
let's talk about important stuff.
Yeah, I want to throw something by you that I didn't run by you before. It has nothing to do with basketball. I went to a UFC event this weekend.
Okay, how was that?
It was weird. It was really, really weird. I'm not a UFC guy. Like, I've seen maybe four fights in my life in terms of UFC fights.
Okay.
I'm not a connoisseur. Like, I know who Conor McGregor is, and I like him because he talks a lot of trash, but. I couldn't pick out, you know, five UFC fighters out of a lineup or whatever. Like, I just don't know anything about it.
Well, you probably could buy the Delts and the Affliction. Kind of like sure. the combination. You probably figured out who they were. Like, the guys with like the weird cauliflower ears, the huge shoulders, and the bad t-shirts.
Right. But it was so weird. We had great seats. We were like, I don't know, like row 12 or something like that.
Where was this?
This was in Utah.
Okay, this was UFC was in Utah.
UFC Fight Night in Utah, Saturday night.
Fascinating. And so, what does the UFC crowd in Utah look like?
Well, there was a fight about 10 feet from us in the crowd, which was great.
Nice.
It was a little later into the night than I expected, but it was a bunch of bros, or just one bro really got out of hand and started swinging at people, and then it was like him and his friend was trying to stop him from doing it. Going after like five guys, which just seemed like not great math to me, not great odds. But he was drunk enough to go for it, and then the cops came down, and nothing really happened outside of that. But at least I got to see a fight up close, which was fun. I watched Dante Exum bring Derek Favors a soda.
Okay.
So that was, you know, showed some good point guard skills right there.
You say it was a good day? Sorry, that's terrible.
Good Lord.
I'm going to stop.
I saw, like, one of the fighters came out in a Freddy mask. Or no, not a Freddy mask.
I like that.
A Jason mask. I mixed up my villains. Okay. Jason mask. And then he lost.
What if he wore maybe it was Shame. That's why he wore the mask.
Well, he lost.
He knew.
He lost to a guy that had fangs as a... as a mouthpiece.
Okay. Actually, I'm familiar with people who do that.
Okay.
So I went to wrestling on Monday night.
Oh, okay.
And I'd be curious as to kind of the cross section of the crowds and do people. So at wrestling, like, everybody wears like a wrestling T-shirt.
Right.
Okay. Like, it is ingrained in the culture. Like, you're going to wrestling. Oh, okay. Wear a wrestling T-shirt. Mine was Dusty Rhodes on a skateboard. obviously.
Of course.
100%. 100% true. What are people wearing at UFC Fight Night? Are they dressed up like you're going to boxing? Are people wearing, like, I assume to be, you know, kind of like Affliction type style, like that kind of T-shirt?
I wouldn't say there was a lot of Affliction or Ed Hardy, but there were a lot of UFC shirts. There were a lot of V-necks.
Okay.
A lot of tight V-necks, a lot of cargo shorts,
a lot of arms.
I would say there were some sort of bedazzled, or at least white piping jeans. So that was definitely there. Yeah,
like fancy jeans.
Yeah, like it's not as fun as a wrestling crowd. Because I did get to go to, I don't know, Raw or something in Cleveland during the playoffs last year.
Shout
out to Lang Whitaker for hooking that up. So it wasn't like a fun wrestling crowd. I sat like three seats from Johnny Manziel that night. So that's another story.
Awesome.
Back when he was an NFL player.
Is that a turning point for Manziel? Maybe as he looked down at Manziel looks down at you and he's like, "I'm three seats from this guy," and he just went. I just went up the rails from that point.
Like, I'm done. I'm not going to control anything anymore. It's an angrier crowd. Like the ring girls or the octagon girls or the UFC girls or whatever that walk around.
Yes.
Like I didn't know catcalling, or as my companion said, wolf whistling. I didn't know that was still a thing in 2016, but like it happened every single time. Like, walks around the octagon, whistles left and right. Like, that felt worse than watching any violent. Like, I mean, it's pretty bad. Like, that part's really bad. But, yeah, it was an angry
like
crowd.
That's an awkward job, it seems like.
Right.
Like, ring girl seems like it's just like, I'm not quite sure, like, where that is on, like, the trajectory. Because, like you said, that's a really hostile environment. Like, that's people that are super charged up for you know, real violence. Like, there was one group that I noticed last night. So this was in Anaheim, which is in Orange County, which adds a whole other level of potential bro-iness to this sort of this mix. There was a group of, like, four guys together in their mid-20s. They might have all been kind of amateur wrestling, like amateur professional wrestlers, is that a thing? Or like kind of like in the minor leagues or something?
Yeah.
But they all had some variation of the barbed wire tattoo, which makes me wonder how old they actually were. That maybe they were actually like 35.
Sure.
Because I think, and if so, is that something that, like, did they do it together? Was this group like, was it coincidence?
Or is that why they became friends? They were all in the gym one day.
It's some sort of subreddit or something.
Right. They were like, oh, you have that tattoo? I have that tattoo. And then they just got together.
Sweet wire, bro. Like something like that.
Right. Sweet wire, bro. Maybe the best line.
Like, it could be kind of how it started. But I'm always surprised when I go to these, like, I've only been to two, that it is peaceful, and maybe it's because there's more kids. Were there a lot of kids at UFC?
I saw like three kids, which I thought that's a weird decision.
There are a lot of kids at wrestling. A lot
of
children. Like enough children there where it makes me uncomfortable that I'm there without any kids. If you know what I mean, where I'm like,
you feel like you're at a playground all of a sudden?
No, it's not even that so much as just like, why am I so interested in something that so many children are interested in? It'd be like if I was like super like stoked for the new Cars movie or something, and I went to it at like 3 p.m. That would be weird.
I did that with Zootopia.
And yeah, that's weird.
But all right, like, there was like eight people in there. I sat in the back. Well, maybe that makes it creepier. But it was also like it was like 3 weeks after it had been out, so I went in thinking there would be no one there.
That's a little different. I'm talking more like I'm walking in, and like I park across the street. I was gonna get a beer, and I was gonna walk over, and walking in, and it's just child after child after child, and I'm what am I doing? Like, shouldn't I be doing something? Like, should I be going to like an accountant instead? There has to be something more adult that I should be doing with my time than this. Like that thought definitely crossed my mind.
Right.
Whereas it sounds like UFC is more like kind of
like I should have,
I don't know, like
weapon.
the worst parts of Roadhouse.
That's a really accurate way of putting it. Yeah, and it's weird. Like, it's weird. And I'm a boxing fan, or at least I used to be a really big boxing fan. Now I've kind of died down a little bit over the years, but
sure.
But I'm not
like boxing.
Yeah, right, exactly. I'm not like averse to like, oh, that guy got punched in the face and now he's bleeding. But there was one fight where a guy had his forehead completely split open by an elbow, and it was like early in the fight, and I think the fight went the whole time. And like there was just a lot of blood everywhere. There is a certain limit where I'm like, this seems like an unhealthy amount of blood to lose. I don't feel good about watching this.
Okay. Like, all right, what's your night like after you see this? Are you like charged up?
No. We walked home and watched the Stranger Things. Yeah.
You and your companion?
Me and my companion.
That's how you referred to your guest at UFC as
I was
your
actually,
quote unquote companion.
I was technically her guest. She got the tickets.
Okay, well, so you were the companion.
I was the companion.
To be clear. Okay,
yeah.
that changes nothing in this scenario. It's an interesting kind of dichotomy. I've never been to one. I'm like mildly interested, but I think like I kind of feel like the UFC, like my first UFC fight that I want to go to, like it happened in like 2007.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
yeah.
Like that it's kind of like we've sort of missed like the UFC that I want to be a part of.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, the, again, like, this, like where me saying Sweetwire bro is way more appropriate. And it's landing with more of the crowd than sort of this new corporate,
right,
no affliction wearing UFC fandom
like,
that I don't want to know.
Right. Instead of saying like, oh, sweet Maori tattoo, bro. Are you New Zealander? Like that's,
we're like dudes. Like we're like the guys are like pretty like juiced up. Or are they like kind of like big guys, like muscular guys?
No, I would say there was a fair number of just regular sized people. But yeah, there were definitely some juiced up guys and some really big guys. I will say this, the last fight of the night, was awesome. It was like these two guys who do like a lot of like flying kicks and knees and like take crazy risks in the way they attack and stuff. Like that looked like I was watching The Matrix. So like that part was like, it was definitely a good note. It was definitely a good note to go out on.
So it's like you watched the first Matrix.
Right. Exactly. Like they saved the first Matrix for last.
All right. Just to be clear.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. But yeah, that just popped into my head, and so I thought I would throw that at you. Let's talk about.
Can I throw one other thing for you?
Sure. Yeah.
That I wish the UFC would do, and it's one of my new. It's going to be, I think, a new hobby of mine, and it's something that I want to share with you and the listeners. So while I was at wrestling, this is the second time, in between matches, whatever, when the commercials are on television, they have to keep you entertained somehow in the arena. And one of the ways they do it, it's largely with like kind of their prepackaged videos or like, you know, maybe it's a commercial for like their new video game or something like that, or what's coming up on their WWE network. I want to make it a point to see as many WWE studio movies as I can. They all look so tremendous. did you know that there was a new 12 rounds? Are you familiar even with the first 12 rounds?
I am. I didn't know there was a new one.
Yes, there's a new 12 rounds, 12 rounds three, so 36 rounds.
Sure.
If we're keeping track.
That's just good math.
It stars Dean Ambrose, who's like nowhere nearly famous enough as a wrestler to be in a movie. And you know it's going to be great. I might be getting my movie trailers confused, I don't remember who the second person was. There was also some other one, like The Condemned 2, I believe.
Oh.
There's another WWE Pictures movie. It seems sort of like a Deadliest Game type of thing.
Sure.
You know, where, like, you know, they're hunting humans or something. But it's starring Randy Orton. And the second billed person, like, and they did not shy away from billing him this way. Like, they, like, it was a big deal that he's in this movie, was Eric Roberts. And I'm like, this movie's got to be amazing. Why am I not buying these on Blu-ray at, like, a local Walmart? Because I assume that's where, like, they do 90% of their business.
Have to. Yeah, they have to. That's got to be.
Do you want to get in on these movies? They look like so up your alley.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to it. I mean, I would definitely, like, I don't know that I want to buy them, but if someone sent me a file or showed me them on TV, yeah, I'm in.
I feel like it's something that I wish it was in my life, and it might be soon. That's all I'm saying. I remember last summer I was talking about doing pull-ups. Like, I've graduated. Can't do pull-ups, but I can watch 12 rounds 3.
It's the same amount of strain on your body.
It really is. It's probably true.
This might actually be more dangerous.
Oh, man. All right. Anyways.
You and I wanted to talk about, we'll end the podcast on this, Tiny House Hunters and the tiny house just realm of TV that is out there.
I detest tiny houses. I love tiny houses.
What?
Like, I'm fascinated by tiny houses.
You detest?
I detest the people on Tiny House Hunters. Hunters themselves.
Yes, 100%.
And I detest, I don't know who I like less. Like, those people are the House Hunters International people. As far as kind of like the people who I'm just like, ugh. Like, that are just like, I don't know. Like, the people that, like, are moving to the Caribbean, but then complain about the size of the bathrooms. Or, you know, why is there no dishwasher here? Like, because you don't live in America anymore, idiot.
My two favorite things about...
you've moved to the jungle. Like, where's your air conditioning? Like, there's no air conditioning there. You're an idiot. I get so angry.
My favorite two things about the Tiny House Hunters, or at least just Tiny House Nation in general, is one, when they go look at the house and like, oh, wow, this is really small. And I just want to
love that reaction.
Yeah, I just want to be like, well, what were you expecting?
I love that reaction.
And then two, on the Tiny House Nation, when they are then forced to pack everything into one box, that whole process of realizing like, oh, I don't really want to do this, but I'm on TV, I have to go through it. That I also really enjoy seeing that internal struggle and that internal pain of those people.
Okay, so the other thing, I can't speak a ton to Tiny House Nation. I'm more Tiny House Hunters
and then
the Tiny House Builders or whatever. Tiny House Life, I think it's called,
sure,
or something. The other HGTV show about tiny houses. I can't keep it straight. Also, by the way, the Tiny House commercial on HGTV might be my, like, I hear that, like, dip, 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 dip. Like, I hear that in my head and I just shudder. It's like the most annoying thing anyway. Oh, sorry. I'm getting very worked up about this. I've never seen my observations about tiny houses. Have you ever seen people more excited for storage? it's like they've struck oil.
My
God, their stairs and their bookshelves. Look at all this storage.
Yeah, it's like everyone is hoping for as many trap doors in their place as possible, because everyone wants to feel like Bruce Wayne, right? Like, oh, maybe this storage will have a bat cave to a much bigger living area that I can get into and escape I think maybe I'm alone on this. I think it's cheating if your tiny house comes on wheels. I really don't like that.
Okay.
I think the tiny house has to have a foundation. I don't think it should just be a small trailer they turn into a house.
Now it's just a big wagon. Tiny house anymore.
Big wagon nation.
It's just a giant wagon. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. I don't think it should have rooms.
Oh,
that's what I don't like. I watched one the other day that had a bedroom.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a tiny house anymore. It's a condo. It's like a New York condo.
I want to see. What would be great is if we had a show where it was a bunch of people who live in New York condos, then go search for like tiny houses in the suburbs and watch them react to how much space there is. Like, oh my god, I live in a mansion.
I know, like, this is incredible. Okay, another gripe I have with tiny houses is, why does every piece of wood have to be reclaimed? I get it already. Like, I want kind of tiny house I want? I want one with all unclaimed wood.
I want one that is as inefficient and bad for the environment as possible.
No. Just some amazing, like, lavish tiny house that runs on, like, premium gasoline. Oh, man.
We're powering your tiny house with a BMW engine.
I watched the other day when someone complained about the size of the sink. Like, it's like, do you know what show you're on? Oh, my gosh, those people.
So have I floated my idea for a follow-up show?
No.
It's
Tiny House Hunter Divorce
yes.
Attorney?
Tiny House Hunter Divorce Court, where they are getting divorced because of their horrible decision, and the loser of the case has to keep the house. So they're both presenting... They're both presenting reasons why neither should have the house going forward.
Can you imagine, like, dating and, like, you know, like, you work up to the point where you get to bring your companion home with you, and you have to drive him back to your weird tiny house?
Like, I swear this isn't a woodshed. This is my actual home.
No, and it's like, I guess, and this is maybe my ignorance on this. Like, I live in California. Like, there's not a ton of places you could put a tiny house, like, really nearby me. I'm trying to think, like, where you could do it, like, other than in a parking lot.
Your driveway?
You know what I mean? Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, that's kind of weird, isn't it?
Yes, of course it's weird.
Like, you're kind of like, I feel like if I'm in a tiny house, I want to be as far away from other, like, medium-sized houses as possible, just for comparison's sake. Like, I don't want to be in a bathroom with both of my shoulders, like, touching the walls, my butt is in the shower, like, my knee is in the sink, and I'm trying to go to the bathroom, and I'm looking out the window at, like, a normal adult-sized home.
With people, like, in a backyard, like, with a trampoline. Everyone's jumping on the trampoline.
I know. That seems cruel.
But then, like, you kind of... That's your own fault for choosing the tiny house. I kind of feel like you should suffer through that.
But in a driveway? No, you need, like, a plot of land somewhere.
No, I want it to be as awkward as possible. I also want, like, a community of tiny houses where in the middle of it, you, like, buy four tiny houses, level them, and build a normal size house. And then you're literally the king of that community.
Okay, I like that idea. That's actually a good idea. Like, where you can... Or you can start taking over, like, other tiny houses and make them part of your own.
Like a game of Risk.
Start building connectors and stuff, and, like, it's just like you have a different wing to your tiny house now. You have a library and a study... How many children can you have where once you suggest moving to a tiny home that, like, the government just comes and takes away?
I'm not totally convinced.
I think if you have more than one, it is a problem.
I'm not totally convinced you can have a gerbil in a tiny house, like, let alone human children.
That's the other thing, too. It's like, there's a huge, huge overlap between people concerned about space for their pets and like, who also want tiny homes on these shows. They all have, like, three cats. All of them.
Right.
And they all want to find places for their cats to run and play. You know what? Like, just don't build a tiny home, Ben.
That seems like the logical conclusion, right?
Like, if space is important to you, this is not the place to do it.
Did you know that Matt Bonner was on an episode?
Really?
As a buyer. As they made him a tiny house, and I believe it's in New Hampshire, according to Luke Bonner's reply to a tweet that I sent.
Like a second home?
I would assume it's not his first home, yeah. I think it's just something to, like, have of, like, oh, maybe we go hunting this weekend. We could go stay in that
tiny
house.
Okay, that's a cabin. That's a cabin.
Ooh, tiny cabin hunt?
That already exists.
Tiny cabins?
That already exists. Okay, and here's the other thing, though. Okay, so if these tiny house people are so smart, right, with all their uses of space and stuff,
yeah.
Like, why is this not, like, migrated to, like, normal size? Like, I'm in a sensibly sized apartment. I could use more storage. Could I not? Should I be building lofts everywhere?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in a good...
Who wants to wake up in a loft? What good can come out of waking up in a loft?
I'm in a good size apartment now, and even then, I rented out a storage unit in the building because I thought, well, I should just have this.
Yeah. So maybe if you had more storage, maybe if the stairs, you know, in your up leading to your apartment.
This island in the kitchen also turns into a bed.
Yeah, right? That's your problem, is that, you know, how dare you want to walk places and not necessarily be. Oh, gosh.
I find
it so infuriating. Now, that this being said, I don't want to be super negative about tiny houses.
I love it.
It's wildly interesting.
It is.
Wildly interesting. And I do like that there are rules for it. Like, I think I forget which show. One of the shows has established tiny house rules, which is that, like, to be a tiny house, you must be smaller than 400 square feet. Or you must be able to fit in a parking spot or something like that. Because, like I said, some of these tiny houses are getting way too big.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't go like, oh, here's my 800-square-foot tiny house. Like, that's a tiny mansion. That's what that is.
Yes. Oh, I love when they turn the tiny houses into tiny mansions, too. Where they have, like, expensive chandeliers and stuff in them. It's like, you know what? I'll just take a couple flashlights if you give me, like, 50 more square feet in the bathroom.
There was...
I'll use my money there.
There was one where they said, like, the person who was selling the hunt, or at least, like, helping them hunt, said, like, don't you love the walk-in closet area? And it was literally just a rack next to the bed. Like, that was the walk-in closet area. Like, there was no closet. It was just they had... There was, like, a hand towel rack on the wall. They're like, here
and
you go. There's
and if you
hangers
look,
on it.
And if you look over your left shoulder, you'll see your dining kitchen.
And if you look over your right shoulder, you'll see your fiancé's attorney filing for separation.
Drafting. Yeah. It would be, and it's always, too, it's a lot of times, it's all, like, a lot of, like, newly married couples that are doing this on these shows because
I gotta know the success.
The economy's bad. Yeah, like, that is brutal, man.
Yeah.
Like, that is a test.
That's really got to be, I mean, I guess if you can get through that, then you really are destined for each other. Maybe that's the move for you.
Way to find out.
For you and your fiance, maybe that's the move.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I seriously, she wouldn't last a day in there. I it'd be like 2 p.m. and I would go to like put on like 90210 or something like that on my DVR and she'd be like, "That's it. Why are you watching this? I'm out."
Is there a worry if you put a satellite dish on the tiny home that it'll tip over?
No, that's it. And that's how. This is not. Are you also the one reason how I know I could never do it is every time I watch that show, every time, and I'm like, "Oh, I really like this house." I always look at it, I'm like, where can I put my 60-inch TV? I'm always like, where are they going to put their big screen? There's no room for it.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
All right.
Yeah, no. So, when you come to California, we should go try to find a tiny house.
Oh.
You should try to Airbnb in one.
That's a great idea. Maybe that's the reason, is you buy a tiny house and then have it as an Airbnb and just... Well, I don't think you can film people, but like try to... record their reactions in some way.
You absolutely cannot be filming people about
Yeah, that sounds illegal. All right,
yeah,
let's
yeah.
go tiny house hunting.
All right, sounds like a plan.
Let's see if we can get on TV. Well, Dan, I appreciate this. I will hopefully see you in the
Always.
Next few days. Follow you on Twitter at Dan Wyke Sports, Orange County Register for
Still.
Clippers beating.
And the LA Daily News, and the Long Beach Telegram, and every other newspaper in the Southern California News Group.
Southern California News Group, absolutely.
Rolls off the tongue.